What's up, y'all? Welcome to the stack.
Y'all.
I'm Alex.
Giddy up, y'all. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete. And this is a packed stack with some huge comics coming out this week. So let's get right to it. Talking about Wonder Woman number one from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Daniel Semperi. This is, as you can tell from the number one, a completely new run on Wonder Woman. This is Tom King taking a stab at the woman of truth. I don't know.
Wrapping his lasso around the leading lady of the DC.
So, yeah, this is highly anticipated. This is very heavily hyped. They're really trying, as so many people have tried before, to be like, hey, we're going to put Wonder Woman on the same level as Superman and Batman. Give her the same love. Give her the same care. We've got Daniel Semperi, who's kick-ass.
Heard that before.
Well, we have. So I think there's this fair amount of trepidation there in terms of how is this going to pan out. But in this first issue, and spoilers past this point, we get a plot line that is very much ripped from the headlines as a attack at a bar kills 19 men, I believe. Seems to be an Amazon who has done it. So the United States of America bans all Amazons, starts shipping them out of the country, breaking up families. It's very war on terror. In particular, as I'm sure what Tom King is and Daniel Semperi are going for here. And then by the end, of course, Wonder Woman doesn't believe that everything is on the level. She is fighting back on it. We, the readers, know she's correct because there's a character named the Sovereign, who is the secret king of America, who has been manipulating everything behind the scenes. So that's the story. That said, what do you guys think? Did it build meet up to the hype? Are you excited for this book going forward?
Well, I feel like Tom King's been slowly creeping closer up the ladder of DC characters, from Mr. Miracle to your Human Target to your Supergirl. And now here we are at Wonder Woman, one of the main three Trinity characters. Very exciting to have his style of storytelling because it's always very well thought out. And working together with always great artists and finding ways to really push the form forward with a lot of the panel designs and everything. So just from a pure comic book status, I think this is great. Storytelling wise, I think this is great. It's one of the best relaunches where the introduction to our main character in the relaunch here is awesome. I like that we get a lot of buildup, a lot of anticipation to Wonder Woman, and then just a great scene in the graveyard with her doing some nice battle. And the status quo is more intense than we've had for Wonder Woman. A lot of it lately has been dealing with more mythology or interpersonal relationships. This is sort of a line-wide change. I'm curious how this will be reflected.
And just to check, in terms of him like really sneaking up on the big Trinity of DC, do you include his 100-issue run on Batman, or does that not count?
That doesn't count.
Okay.
Well, but, and I guess I mean that in more like, that wasn't to me the run that he was. That was more about the relationship, and it wasn't like a redefinition.
Yeah, the Bat and Cat relationship.
Bat and Cat. And this feels very much like this is my take. And this feels more like the other Tom King miniseries or maxi series issues, series that he's done over the course of the run.
Yeah, totally fair. Pete, what about you?
Yeah, I like a badass Wonder Woman. I thought this was
really.
Yeah, not surprisingly. I thought, you know, when she was crushing old metal arm there, that was a fun panel there.
Steel.
Yeah, you know, the kind of last panel of the evil overlord reveal was fun, you know. So, yeah, I think this is a solid first-ish setting things up. Tom King likes to play the long game, you know, likes to kind of like, you know, not sure what's happening in stories a little bit. This is a little bit more straightforward, which I was surprised about, you know, but I'm excited for it. You know, I'm a big fan of Wonder Woman. So now that there's a new Wonder Woman, that's always great. And so I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah, I spent most of this issue being worried, knowing Tom King and having read everything that he's written, that Wonder Woman would never show up. You know, the first issue, and it kept building, and I kept being like, either she's never going to show up, which is a very classic Tom King thing to do, or they're building anticipation for actually revealing her. And I was very happy to see that it was the latter.
Yeah.
And also very happy to see that Daniel Semperi 100% nailed the reveal.
Crushed.
The way that was laid out was gorgeous. The ultimate reveal of Wonder Woman was kick ass in this book. And I love having her as like this, she has this history behind her that she is already starting at a place of like, come on, we know this was a fake. This was faked. What are we doing here? And we, the reader, through the Sovereign's narration, because this is another like reading the first two thirds of the book or so felt like Tom King's bag of tricks, where it's like, keep the main character off screen. And the person who you think is narrating is not actually the person who's narrating. But his bag of tricks, he uses them because they're good tricks, you
They're good
know?
tricks. That's why you have them in a bag. Because you
Exactly.
want to
Like, you don't
take
want
them
to
with
lose
you.
them. Right.
Exactly. All
If
the
they're
stuff
all
I
over
have in
the
a bag, I'm
counter,
like, keep
you know?
track.
No,
Oh, yeah.
100%.
That's why you don't say, like, strewn about the car of tricks, you know?
That's right. Yeah, you don't
Because
have
it's harder to
that.
find them.
Yeah.
But Tom King's original pitch is, I wonder where this woman is. And they show him
Oh
at the Wonder
boy.
Woman.
Oh
There we
boy.
go. I do wonder about the Sovereign as a villain. I'm curious to know more because seeing like a decrepit old man on a throne being like the secret king of
Yeah,
America.
but he has a black lasso. You know what I mean?
He does. He has the
The
lasso
lasso
of
of lies.
lies, which I
Yeah.
like. I like that as a concept. I do. This feels like the sort of thing that is like very goofy 70s comics to me. I know they're not going to treat it that way. I just need to see what
I
he.
also really want to see somebody who's just like they want the truth out of them, but all they can do is lie. And they're like, "Where were you last Tuesday?" I'm like, "Oh, I was at a carnival." "You're lying." "Oh, okay, you got me. I was at my aunt's house." "No, you're still lying." Yeah.
Like crossing over with Jim Carrey's famous liar, liar, which you're saying.
I'm just saying the lasso of truth has a real reason, you know what I mean? Where you can get the truth out of somebody. Like, who cares if somebody lies? You know what I mean?
Well, do you think this is going to be the Green Lanternification of the lasso? And we're going to get the lasso of like fibs, the
Yeah.
lasso of like
The rage
half-truths.
lasso, the
Yeah.
yeah, that'd be
Yeah, just
fun.
the lasso across the lying truth spectrum.
Yeah.
But let me throw out there also one more thing. This, to your point earlier, Alex, this back at half of the issue, the reveal of the Sovereign, reminded me of a Mark Russell take. It very much like in that sort of comment, meta commentary satire vibe. And I actually think that's a good spot for Tom King to be in, doing the sort of hard militaristic first half and then building up to this character reveal that's like a goofy, skinny old dude.
Well, it kind of
Well,
reminded me of The Preacher a little bit, where you have this kind of like
Ooh, that's a
douchebag
great call.
reveal
That
at the end.
definitely Sovereign looks like a preacher character, 100%.
Yep.
I also wanted to mention just off of this, because there was a little discussion in our Patreon Slack about it.
Our Slack?
I know
Our
that Tom
Slack.
King not got a start, but worked for a while in the CIA. So there's a fair amount
Oh,
of
shit.
trepidation in terms of him talking about American stuff, but he's been very open about the fact that he worked with the CIA and then got disillusioned with the American government and America as a whole. And I think that's what he's playing on here. Like, again, it's very clearly he's not like war on terror, good stuff. He's like, no, war on terror, we're separating
Bad
families
stuff.
without reason. This is, in fact, very bad and as horrific as possibly can be. And he's doing it through the lens of the Amazons, but this is stuff that happens every day. Families are separated, they are torn apart, people are killed. It's awful.
I think truth to that, but I also think we had Tom King on the show back when he was doing his Nightwing Agent 37, was it? Book
Grayson.
Grayson, yeah, and we had him on when we were doing the show down in Chinatown, and he came and talked about him being sort of coming up to the government and sort of how that affected his work on Grayson.
Yeah, so I'm very excited about this run. Let's kick it off, not kick it off, but move on to another big number one here. Captain America number one from Marvel, written by J. Michael Straczynski, art by Jesus Saiz. In this issue, we are very much picking up on the run from Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, as Captain America is still living in this apartment building here. Ultimately, he decides, spoiler, to buy the apartment building, but we're also jumping throughout time to find the 4 years between when he was a skinny dude and he at 14 and became Captain America at 18. As well as other points in his history. We're also getting the building up of a new villain here who apparently has the best villain plan of all time, though that we don't know exactly what it is. But there's a lot of things that are being thrown in the mix here. I want to throw something out first that really struck me about this book is, this is going to sound a little crazy to say at first, but the color brown, like the fact that it's not exactly sepia tone, like there are browns, which are very old timey, but the fact that the cover is that and the coloring throughout is seeped with brown is something that you just don't see in comics. And it initially, I was frankly thrown by it because I feel like brown is not like a catchy color in the same way that a white and black like Jonathan Hickman loves or a red is or something like that. But it really makes it stand out. And it's really a very purposeful decision that I thought was really fascinating to see play out throughout the book.
Well, you can even see it in different pages where there's a lot of, like you're saying, the flashback and there's some crossover panels and you can see the sort of skinny cap is still in that little tinted brown look and present day cap almost right next to him just pops with a lot more vibrancy and whatnot. And that is cool, I think.
Artistically, it's great to have like the different time periods reflected and the different artistic styles really helps the reader kind of. The thing, though, that I was very excited for this book, the art is phenomenal. I was just a little disappointed about where we ended up because I was like, okay, you know, let's spend some more time with Cap. Let's really get to know him. And I thought, great, awesome. And then he's like, I'm going to show you how to be the greatest landlord in the world. And I was like, well, I don't know if we need this story right now, but okay, great. And then it turns out, like, the big reveal at the end, it's like, guys, it's really easy to join the Nazi party because they give out free sandwiches. I was like, whoa, whoa, Cap, what are we doing here? What are we doing?
I knew that was going to bother
you.
This is just bullshit. Like, I don't need Captain America to like fall for.
Anybody who hasn't read it, in the 4 years, we get to see Cap is destitute on the streets, taking any job that he possibly can, and ultimately gets offered a sandwich in Central Park. And this is a real thing that happened. There's a Nazi rally there. That's where the sandwich comes from. So we'll see what happens, but the implication seems to be that, like, either he fought against potentially the Nazi party in New York, or potentially he like got into it a little bit over the course of the years.
If the sandwich was really good. Well, let me ask you, Pete, you would never accept a sandwich from a Nazi in this situation, it seems like. But do you always check the politics when you order your Subway Club from Subway of the people behind the counter? Because what if there's someone with some shady politics making your meatballs?
Well, you know, that's a tough call.
Always ask.
Excuse me. You've seen those propaganda posters, right? Where it's like, who's making your meatball sub? Could be Hitler.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You guys got me.
Busted. This comic, besides the fascist subs that Pete's eating, I do think... this feels like it's Captain America as Jesus, American Jesus. We're sort of getting into this middle period of like, what happened between when he was skinny Cap and when he became buff Cap? And we're learning about how he fought the Nazis in a chill way, I guess.
I mean, I love how it starts with him on a motorcycle, like, you know, taking care of business. That was awesome. I was just really surprised at like what happened after
this is I would say this comic is biting off a lot, but
yeah,
it's J. Michael Straczynski.
Free sandwich.
It's J. Michael Straczynski who does this. Like, he builds histories and he changes things and he figures out the whole plan of where he's going. So I'm 100% willing to follow him on this journey, but throughout this book, even though I think it's paced out very well, it definitely felt like, oh my God, we're doing the secret history of Cap in the 4 years that we didn't know about, and also Captain America landlord, and also there's the secret enemy. So there's a lot going on here and a lot to balance. I trust, again, given JMS knows what he's doing most of the time, that we're going to be guided along the way. But yeah, anybody else, I'd be like, this is too much for a
It's
beginning
too much,
age.
yeah. Well, and let me throw out there, is Cap gonna be like a Hawkeye landlord? Is that what we're getting into? He's gonna goof around, have a little dog, pizza dog, you think?
I don't
Pete,
know,
Cap's pizza
man.
dog,
I
maybe?
mean, what
Pete's
we'll
a
see.
dog.
Pizza dog. The other thing I would say is I do like we get this little side bit where he goes and just fights with the Fantastic Four for a little while. It seems like we're getting it again in the second issue based on the preview of him with Spider-Man. And I actually really like that. I like Captain America has been existing outside in a very Ed Brubaker inspired world of espionage. And I like injecting him back into sort of the main superhero world and having him like, knock, knock, hey, Cap, we have to go fight someone in a fucked up dimension. Would you mind coming with us? And he's like, let's go, dogs.
I
And
will
I
say,
like
and
that.
then we can move on to the next issue. I love the panel of him after he's fighting with the Fantastic Four, get out of the negative zone and just lying on the grass for like one panel, being like, okay, just catch my breath here
But the
and then I'll
I
go.
love it.
The problem is, I would like to be able to enjoy that, but by he's gone, there's a little old lady in 2C whose faucet's leaking all over her apartment, and this guy's got to come down and fix it, and
We should
he's
probably
too
mention
busy with the
Pete is dealing
Fantastic
with a lot
Four.
of real estate drama right now, so that's very much where
Noah
you're
has
going.
no,
Pete
has
hates
nothing to do with
landlords. Pete hates a landlord, and he's torn between loving Cap and hating all landlords. What are you going to do, Pete?
Which side are you on?
I don't know. I mean,
Yeah,
the
which
hardest
side are
thing
you?
for me was if someone handed me a sandwich and I was starving, and then they were like, it's a Nazi sandwich. I'd be like, no, and throw it on the ground. But then I'd be like, no, sandwich on the ground. Oh, I just wasted it
He
on
loves
screen time.
sandwiches.
Yeah.
Jimmy
This is a real
Jones has
triggering.
deep ties to the Nazi Party. Why don't we move on and
And
talk
I'm
about
Jersey
where,
Mike's guy, so that's fine with
speaking
me.
of, you're okay.
Oh,
Jersey
yeah.
Mike,
Don't you
also a
mean
Nazi.
Berlin's Mike? Berlin's Mike?
Oh, Jesus.
Why don't we stop talking about food and instead talk about Rare Flavors, number one for Boom Studios,
Wow.
written by Reb, the art by Felipe Andrade. This is the same team behind The Many Deaths of Layla Starr,
Oh, come on.
arguably the most
Shouts.
lauded book of the past couple of years. It was one of our
Yes.
best graphic novels, one of our best
We were the
series.
first ones, I think, to talk
Yeah,
about it.
we were the on the bleeding edge. We were on the cusp
Always.
here.
Cusp.
So a lot of setup in this issue. We are following what seems to be some sort of gods on Earth, one particular god who is very interested in food and recruiting somebody to film a documentary about him while a bunch of stuff is going on outside that at the same time. Given the high watermark of Many Deaths of Layla Starr, what'd you think about this book?
Well, first off, you got to talk about how breathtaking it is, because it's absolutely beautiful. I mean, this
It's
is
taken my breath away.
magnificent, magnificent art. I mean, this is just like it's almost kind of like pastels or kind of like a water color, like floating art. It's worth it for the art alone, if I could use a phrase that is overused. But the
By you.
story.
By you, by
Sure,
specifically you.
still overused. But I all the art aside, there is this creepy ass kind of main character who is kind of trying to recruit somebody, and we're trying to figure out what's going to happen. So very interesting story that I think is it relies on how unique it is to hook you in, because it's not giving us a lot of explanation or what's going on. It's just kind of throwing us into what's going down, and then we're just supposed to be kind of running with it, which I think is a very confident move that they pull off really well.
Yeah, you could feel this being the next book behind Layla Starr pretty intensely, I think, as you're reading it. Sort of right next door in a lot of the ways it's presented and some of the ideas, the way it's sort of a little bit slow played. But I will say, the story pulled me in. I like the what's been set up. I like the sort of tension that's here. The reveal later on, which I guess I won't spoil, but like there's a lot going on right there. There's a lot of characters sort of swirling this idea. And I love a little recipe in the middle.
Oh, you love a good recipe.
This feels very manga to me. Like it feels very manga
Oh, good call.
inspired in terms
Especially with the
of,
recipe.
yes, especially with the recipe, in terms of the pacing of it as well. It actually feels very different from Layla Starr. In terms of Layla Starr was like, I know what this is for the first issue. Here we are beginning a story. Felipe Andrade's art is gorgeous. These are very different characters, like Pete said, the pastels and The washed out coloring throughout is really fascinating to see, but I'm not 100%. This is very much like a setup issue, so I'm excited to read the second issue, but I'm not 100% sure where it will go, but I will follow it wherever it does go.
Ooh.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spin-off series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. Green Lantern War Journal, number one
War
from DC Comics.
Journal.
Journal written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Montos. If you are curious about more about this title, we talked to Philip Kennedy Johnson at
Yes,
Bell
we did.
Baltimore
Oh,
Comic
only
Con.
if we talked about him about this, that would have been cool.
We talked to him
We
about
did.
this. We
Oh,
did.
we did.
Man,
And you can
we did
check it
our
out on the
homework.
Comic Book Club feed. We got a whole interview about that where he touched on this, but this is spinning off of the backstory from Green Lantern. We are getting another universe is encroaching on the DC universe, and Jon Stewart is caught in the middle. What'd you think about the kickoff here?
I think this is fun. I feel like I'm feeling a lot of Philip Kennedy Johnson's work in his Alien series, like in especially in the beginning here, not just because it's set in space, but just the way the tension is played out and sort of there's the problem is laid out here well before we get to see John dealing with the stuff that he's been spinning out from his backups that he's been doing in the main Green Lantern title. And the art's fantastic. I like it has a little, and maybe I'm influenced by the Hulk book that Philip Kennedy Johnson is also doing, but it has a little bit of a horror element in here, and I think that's a good spot for John Stewart to be in.
Yeah, I think this is a hell of a first start. I'm very excited about where this is going to go and what's going to happen. And I feel like this is a really solid first issue. I mean, you can't show up to somebody's mom's house. You know what I mean? That's fucked up. You know, I don't care what planet you're from. You don't go to somebody's mom's house, you know? But I think
Just
this
for a
is
visit?
to talk shit or to do something bad. You know what I mean? Like if you want to show up to somebody's mom's house and bring food and say hi and, you know, do something nice, you can. You can't
Yeah.
just, you know what I mean?
I
Barge
did drop
into
off
it.
two garbage plates at your mom's house, and I did talk a little shit, though, at the same time. My bad.
Well, that's fucked up, but I'm glad that she's got some garbage plates.
She
I
got her
just,
garbage.
yeah, she got her
Mama
garbage plates.
got her garbage. Mama got her garbage.
I think this is a really solid first start. I'm excited to see what's going to happen here. And also some really crazy cool covers. The one with John Stewart with Gatling gun was pretty badass.
Yeah, this is definitely Philip Kennedy Johnson trying to take Jon Stewart and put him on the same level as Hal Jordan and the rest of the Lanterns, and I appreciate that. This is bringing in also a very Philip Kennedy Johnson villain in terms of the Radiant Dead is what I think it's called, which is basically like Star Sapphire zombies, essentially. So really intriguing start. Very excited to follow this book. Why don't we talk about Predator versus Wolverine, number one from
Whoa.
Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Ken Lashley, Gren Land, and Andrea DeVito. In this issue, we are kicking off with Wolverine and Predator fighting in the present, and then we flash back and find out they've basically been fighting out throughout
They've been
Wolverine's
fighting this
history.
whole time, man.
This whole
We didn't
time.
even know about it.
I'll tell you what. This is exactly what you want from a Predator versus Wolverine book,
Yeah.
art-wise and writing-wise.
Yeah,
Agree.
I agree. I think it's a fun kind of like, I mean, I would have loved just one battle, but we kind of got battles throughout time, which is a kind of fun reveal. Also, you got like different predators from different movies, and you getting different Wolverines from different time periods too. So, very cool idea, very well executed, and also the kind of tease of the next to come. where it's like the Schwarzenegger one, where there are kind of Wolverines in the jungle there, and it's looking very kind of like 80s style. So very cool, a
Predator.
ton of fun.
The movie Predator.
The movie Predator, yeah.
Schwarzenegger one.
Yeah, Schwarzenegger movie, The Predator. We're talking about Predator versus Wolverine, not the Schwarzenegger
I think
Wolverine movie.
this comic's sort of based on that movie in some
Really?
ways.
Okay.
You could say it is. I agree, this is fun. It's very funny to me how much of the Predator mythos at Marvel is like, these predators are showing up whenever the fuck they want on Earth. They just pop in. It's like they're traveling around following their favorite football team, tailgating, then landing on Earth to like hunt whoever's running around, moving people from different time periods. Hey, look at this guy's got bone claws. Let's get him. Uh-oh, later he's more dangerous because he's got more metally claws. Fun.
Great stuff and great mix of artists as well. Madam Satan, Hell on Earth, number one from Archie Comics, written by Elliot Rahal, art by Vincenzo Federici. This brings together a lot of threads from the Archie horror line as the apocalypse finally comes for Riverdale with Madam Satan in the middle. She is teaming up with Jinx, is the character who shows up here, which is just been introduced and drawn to prominence at Archie. What'd you guys think about this issue?
I thought this was really.
Horrifying.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, that's it. One word.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I thought this was a great first ish.
Awoo, what word?
Fun twists and turns. And sometimes you're on top of the kind of Satan world, and sometimes you're a homeless mummy, but you got to ride or die with your choices. So I appreciate that. I like the fun twist kind of last panel. I'm having a great time with this.
The way that Archie Comics sort of approaches all their books is like, let's put this as far away from your mainstream expectations of what an Archie comic book is, and we'll work our way back. And we've seen a little bit of setup, even some continuity here between Madame Satan, Jinx. Those characters have been on a collision course, weirdly, for a couple stories. And this book is horrifying. It's got a wild continuity that it's dealing with. But it still makes me want to keep reading, especially the mainline horror stuff they're doing.
Catwoman number 57 from DC Comics, written by Teenie Howard, art by Nico Leon. This is continuing the Gotham War storyline as Batman and Catwoman are on opposite sides here. Of course, we're mostly focusing on Catwoman, though there's plenty of Batman stuff as well as crickets, of course, in the background.
That's right.
And Like, what is
yeah, what's going on? Are you suddenly in the woods?
Yeah, I'm a cricket.
Oh, that makes sense.
And in this issue, lots of stuff we're dealing with, lots of balls that are in the air as Vandal Savage has bought Wayne Manor. Jason
Fucked
Todd
up.
is on the other side of things. And of course, Justin is in the beautiful woods.
Yeah.
I think a cricket just showed up right outside my basement window
I don't
because
know. It's
he is
very weird.
humming.
Yeah,
He
he
loves
is.
Bat Cat romance, and despite the fact that they're not really getting along here, I think this cricket's along for the ride. That's been my cricket review of Catwoman number 57.
Well,
Now,
fun.
Pete, obviously it's bothering you that Vandal Savage is making a major real estate purchase here, which is
Yes.
really, he's becoming the landlord for Bruce Wayne, who's going to have to end up getting his faucet fixed by one of his greatest enemies.
I mean, what's crazy to me is Batman it was just the sleep at the wheel, and someone could just buy out his property underneath him without him being aware. It's like he's just kind of like, what? And he was like, yo, I own this piece now.
Well,
Get
to
out
be
of my bat
fair,
cave.
he was literally asleep
It's
at the
pronounced
wheel.
Tubi, pal.
He was asleep for 8 weeks or something like
Yeah.
that. Like
Eight
he was
weeks,
in
and
a
that's a
coma
lot
after.
of
That's not
that.
even,
And if.
that's like one payment cycle he missed. You know what I mean? You can't just fucking,
Too
you can't.
focused on real
You're
estate
in too
right
deep. You think Batman's still paying off Bruce, paying off Wayne Manor?
Apparently, if someone could
Bruce
just
Banner.
buy it.
Yeah, Bruce Banner
We
as it's
like to
known.
call it Bruce Banner.
Do you feel like when there's a leaky sink, he fixes it or he's like, Alfred?
Alfred.
Bathroom 92 over there is a leaky sink. Could you pop over and give it
He
a
can't
twist?
anymore. Alfred's dead. I guess he could dig up Alfred's
Oh,
corpse and
stop.
use him as
You're
like a
fucking awful.
screwdriver or something
Have
like
some
that. Oh,
respect, man.
that's a
Have
good a
some goddamn
bone
respect.
screwdriver.
Use
Screwdriver's the main tool when
his
you're doing plumbing,
hands as a
Alex.
wrench. I don't know.
All right. Well, first off, you get this adorable cover.
Sorry, Pete, real quick. Could you use Alfred's corpse as a wrench? What do you think?
Yeah. No.
Is it a continuity question?
You guys are going to hell. That's an awful thing
but
to
wouldn't
say.
He want to continue buttling in any way that he can, even in death?
Shut up, Cricket. Anyways, so this... First off, you get this cover where it's Bat and Cat together, and you think, oh, maybe this war is going to be fine. But it's not. Everything is not good for Batman. He's losing it. He's losing his shit. He's literally at the graves crying. People are watching him like, yo, Batman is not okay. I just think that there's a lot going down, which is very cool. It's just weird to see people picking sides and Batman kind of losing and Catwoman winning. The whole kind of Catwoman, Jason Todd kind of moment was kind of touching where she was like, you know, we're fighting, but I'm still trying to look out for these people, which was kind of nice. So it's not all just evil. But that whole kind of like savage dancing with Catwoman at the gala, I mean, that's Batman's gig. That's usually where he shows up for that, you know, so that was messed up as well. This is a real war, and I'm worried about the aftermath of this here.
You're worried?
Yeah, I'm worried.
I was a bit dubious about this crossover at first. It felt a little forced for the characters. But this issue I thought was great. Really, first off, really great art that Pete, I wish you had talked about. It's almost like you could almost just gotcha. The story is really fun, and I like the way that this book is preserving itself as a Catwoman book, even though there's so much going on with Batman and Jason Todd here.
Uncanny Spider-Man number one from Marvel, written by Cy Spurrier, art by Lee Garbutt. In this issue, Nightcrawler is now in New York. He is in one Spider-Man's costumes and trying to be a hero, despite the fact that because of Fall of X, mutants are completely outlawed. I know Pete is going to yell at me for saying this, but I think this was my issue of the week. Absolutely love this. I was unsure about this idea. I didn't understand what it would mean about Nightcrawler being in a Spider-Man costume. It seemed like such a weird concept to me, but this 100% worked because Nightcrawler's humor and his conflict with the fact that, like, recently in continuity, he turned into a big demonic dude and killed a guy while he's wrestling
with him. Which is weird.
Which is weird, but it feels like very classic Spider-Man of like, I have this guilt, but I'm trying to be funny and save people at the same time. The new status quo with the Vulture, he is now working for Arcus, I think is great.
Love
and
that.
The reveal of Silver Sable on essentially a goblin glider at the end, also fantastic. I had an absolute blast reading this book.
I mean, just the way that things progress from like fun to fun to fun and then throw in a Silver Sable reveal at the end. Hello, this book is made for your man JT over here, JT Cricket. So like I thought this was great as well. And maybe the most fun, weird side book for the Fall of X event. The way it lines up. And let me throw out there also, we're going to talk about another Spider-Man book later. This book is more Spider-Man than that Spider-Man book, and I won't take it.
Hey, can you turn up the cricket a little bit? It's a hard. I have a hard time hearing you.
I am at home in Brooklyn, and if there's a cricket here, I can't control the bug situation here. There's just bugs popping.
You're losing the battle.
I'm in Brooklyn, New York, the heart of the city. It's a cricket out here.
If we could speak cricket, it would be a cricket going, "Hey, how you doing?" You gotta fold your pizza over here. Yeah. So
I gotta go out there and yell at this cricket. What if he's
just fire
cricket? I'm trying to podcast over here. Come on.
Hey, what's your opinions on Nightwing? It came out today. Hey.
Oh, hold on a second. The crickets actually sit in front of a tiny mic, and I guess he's also podcasting. Mad at me for being too.
He's mad at you, makes
he's
sense.
He's on that podcast, I Cricket, right?
Oh, yes, that's exactly. Wow.
Shout outs. All right. Anyways, I mean, I read this and I was like, is this what we need right now? We need Nightcrawler as Spider-Man because Spider-Man sucks? I don't know. I was trying to enjoy this. I really was, but I just, This mix them up of things. I don't know. I mean, cool, be creative, try new things. Cool, great. But I just I didn't know where the fun was. You know what I mean? That vulture
was so
who looked
funny,
like
the whole thing about like,
you got your time to talk.
No, but like
I'm claiming my time.
Wow.
The thing about the tail, Spider-Man being like, how do you fit the tail in the costume?
It's fun.
Was very funny. It's fun.
Bamf. Was that funny? You thought that was funny?
Yes. That's why okay. I said that.
I didn't think it was funny. Anyway, the vulture who looks like Cypher juiced up with wings just was like, what is this? This looks really dumb.
I don't think that's intentional.
Maybe it's just not for me, and I don't know. I'm glad people are enjoying this and liking it. You know, they make stuff for different people, and awesome. If it's for you, perfect,
so,
great.
So, Pete,
I'm
you
just
saying
reading this, and I'm like, who is this for? I don't like this. Get this away from me.
Are you saying this combination of two of your favorite characters and your least favorite versions of them in like a decade, you don't like?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't like this combination of those things. Oh, interesting.
Yep. Yeah.
I talked to the cricket and he's cool. He's just trying to hook up.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's nice. Sorry to step on his dick there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about an advanced comic? Knights number one out October 11th from Image Comics, written by Wyatt Kennedy, art by Luigi Formisano. For Misato.
Yeah.
I don't know why I had a problem with that.
Anyway, have a this problem is a, for me the words.
Hey, for Misato. This is a proto-vampire story about a girl vampire who is just like mostly kind of hanging out, but this
don't weird... give it away. It's not out yet. Okay? You can't spoil it.
No, I think we can say that. This is a world where like a bunch of monsters exist and other things exist. But what did you guys think about this? We obviously like really enjoyed Bolero from Wyatt Kennedy. How do you feel about this follow-up here?
I think this is like adorable and also scary. I really love the art style, to get that in before Justin makes fun of me. But I was impressed. It's kind of a slice of life kind of teenage vampire story, which I appreciated. Like, it had this kind of indie feel and this kind of cool pace to it that was very confident, very kind of like, this is what's going on in this vamp's life right now. I definitely think this is cool and worth checking out. I thought it was very unique and had a cool feel to it.
This book takes a lot of wild swings. And at first I was like, what are we doing here? Let me shout out the opening words after behind the cover. Florida is owned by Spain. America consists of 31 states. Vampires, ghosts, and other supernaturals are common and benign. The internet is infantile and irrelevant. That's how we start the book. And then it just goes into this other stuff. And then we got vampires just sort of hanging out. And then we move into a couple different time periods over the course of it. So I was like, whew, this is a lot. But I actually really liked it over the course of the read. Like, I liked the characters. I liked sort of the moves. I'm curious to see where all of these wild things on the table end up taking this book.
I love that. I love taking these wild, insane swings at the beginning of the book and then using it as a setting rather than the concept, using the idea of like, we have these characters. I want to dive into these relationships and talk about these people and how they affect each other. I think that's absolutely wonderful. And that's really bold. That's something you don't see in comics a lot. And the art by Luigi Formisano is really clean. It reminds me a little bit of Jamie McKelvey in a certain way. Like, it's not.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Like, the lines are not quite as thick. It's not quite as specific, but like, It's very clean art, like, and it's very defined.
Reminds
art.
Me of Luna Brothers a little bit.
Luna Brothers, I could see, like, probably not as quite as exaggerated as that, but I think that's a good call out as well. This is a good book. Definitely pick this up when it comes out in October. Really,
I would throw out one other comparison, and it's I have recency bias because we're reading it, but like, It reminded me of some of the ways that the swings are brought in is very Scott Pilgrim, in that it's just like, nope, here's a ghost running by. And it's like, it just happens. And then it's suddenly woven into the story. So
the ghost thing was so much fun with that little running zombie or whatever. Or not to spoil anything.
Yeah, great stuff. Definitely pick this up. Next one, Nightwing number 106 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor and Michael W. Conrad, art by Stephen Byrne and Serge Acuna. In this issue, we're finally picking up on that weird pirate ship thing from a couple of issues back. I think this was like 98 or 99, where Nightwing left something for himself in a secret safe. We finally find out that was while he was Rick Grayson, aka shot in the head and not really having his memory, that weird period of time back in DC Comics. And we're moving forward from there. As usual, this is great.
Fantastic. Leave it to Tom Taylor to be able to weave in maybe the least popular version of Nightwing for the last decade, where he was Rick Grayson. He was just like sort of mean and like wandering around Bloodhaven being a jerk, and weaves it in pretty seamlessly to this book that is all about, that is so bright and so sweet and about our superhero just being super all the time. Really good. Love the backup as well. That's more in the sort of Nightwing Batgirls side of things. This book just doesn't disappoint.
Yeah, anytime T Squared is on a book, I'm going to check it out, because Tom is a fantastic writer. Yeah, and always taking interesting kind of looks at stuff. And yeah, I think I am very excited to see what happens, because it seems like such an interesting setup of like, hey, here's some important documents that maybe I should have read that I'm just going to put in a safe place. And I'm like, oh, those are going to be important later. We're really going to have to come back to that and see what it says.
That's true in real life too, Pete, with important documents of yours.
Well, that's what, like, I'm trying to
for
say.
For instance, a deed.
You should read documents when you get them and then kind of like decide where to put them. You know what I mean? Because it looks like he didn't read them at all. You know, he just got an envelope and then kind of passed it off to somebody else. You got to read that first. At least take it a little time before you put it somewhere safe.
Pete, when we eventually open the black box with all of your important documents, what comics will it be filled with exclusively?
It's going to be a lot of comics in there for sure.
Where's his will? I don't know, but he left Garth Ennis's Punisher in here.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why don't we move on and talk about Alpha Flight number 2 from Marvel, written by Ed Bryson, art by Scott Godlewski. In the last issue of the book, we found out that the two teams of Alpha Flight were not actually two teams. They were one team. They're trying to rescue mutants and take them to safety. However, half the team is pretending to work for Canada, who is attacking mutants. And that's what they're continuing to struggle with this issue. What did you think about this one?
A lot of great Puck lines in here. You know what I mean?
Just pucking around is what we're doing here.
Well, you know, Puck's like, man, what a state of affairs. You know what I mean? Someone is safer in a war zone than their own home. You know, like, wow, Puck giving us the gravitas, you know, hitting us with those hard lines. That one line where he's like, what do we do, boss? I was like, Puck, oh, you're killing me. This is fun. I know it's kind of in this X-Men continuity, which kind of blows, but I'm still enjoying the Puck of it all.
What I like about this side of the Fall of X stuff is Alpha Flight has been able to carve out their own stakes for this book off to the side. They're dealing with the repercussions of it, but it's only to serve their team story. And I really like that. The other books are telling a larger story, but it feels like there aren't individual stakes in a lot of the single issues. And this, it's keyed up, it's stressful, and there's inherent drama here.
Keyed up from the seed up.
That's sure. What I say.
Yeah, everybody always says that. Judder Baker, The Righteous Faker, number 1 from Image Comics, written by Joe Casey, art by Ryan Quackenbush. In this issue, it is a Joe Casey comic, so Pete, take it away.
Well, first off, I had to pause there. That last name took me by surprise. Quackenbush is quite a fun last name there.
So, I have friends whose last name are Quackenbush.
from Darkwing Duck.
Yeah.
They live in
the Darkwing Duck characters. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Blathering Blatherskite. I'd love to meet them.
But also Junior Baker, the Righteous Faker, is also a great name. So they're killing it already.
I think we should move on from our review from there because we've covered everything. Oh, yes, Justin.
No, hold on. Yeah, let's, because I love Joe Casey's work. This is coming off of another title that we've read and reviewed a bunch, Butcher Baker, the Righteous Maker. Right?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So you see that there's a connection here potentially. Or again, it's a Joe Casey book. Maybe not. We don't know. This book feels like where Butcher Baker was like a wild, revved up, high octane, multi-dimensional comic book. This feels like it's just revving its engines. We're starting in sort of a more regular place. There's a lot of like mystical things happening. I feel like we're going to really jump off in the next issue.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a tripped out crazy good time type of comic. There's a lot going on here. And, you know, there's that kind of like night sky ghost a little bit where it's kind of like very mystical and interesting looking. So, yeah, I'm very intrigued, and I feel like as a first issue, it really did a great job of kind of setting up an interesting idea, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
The art and colors are gorgeous in this book. It really feels to be like a Vertigo book, like vintage Sandman a little bit. So
nice, yeah.
I like looking at it. I had a hard time hanging on to the story, is what I would
interesting,
say.
Interesting.
But that's you got to let it wash over you when Joe Casey's in it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Superman number 6 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Gleb Melnikov, I guess. In this issue, Superman finds out about a secret that is left over from Lex Luthor's days as a hero. He captured somebody, threw them in a cell far below Metropolis, and of course, Superman tries to save that person, and it goes horribly wrong.
Gets into trouble.
Oof. I love this book. Like I love
seem Philip... surprised by your review of it.
Well, I don't know, because I wanna like Philip Kennedy Johnson. We love Philip Kennedy Johnson. And I love like the whole Superman family thing. But I think this is my Superman book right now, just because there's big bold swings that feel to me like back in the day when we had all four Superman books going weekly and it was four different books, but they were really just one book. That's what this feels like to me, where it's taking these like Mercy Graves, Supercore, Lois Lane running the Daily Planet, Superman freeing this new villain and trying to do the right thing, but creating this villain called the Chained. It's just these big wild swings, and I'm really enjoying it. The moment I tried to repeat this with my family and it completely fell flat. But the moment where Superman comes
into... You mean us? Your family?
No, my actual family. When
what?
I'm sorry, I have a second family. I've been cheating on you. When Superman comes into Lois Lane's office and is like, "Hey, Metropolis." Oh, weird. I've never said that before. Great joke.
Is it? Well, don't let the sounds of cricket... sounds after you said that joke influence you at all.
Wow.
Or the tumbleweed that came across screen.
Yeah,
that's just a sound effect I'm playing over and over again.
Yeah, smart.
I see why you like it, Alex, because I also like it. It definitely feels like a status quo back to basic Superman book, where it's just like Superman core team, Lex did a bunch of bad things. I'm friends with Lex now. I have to pick up all of his pieces, and we're moving through that. The art is very much like superhero book, while the other book feels like it's expanding the family. It's dealing with a lot of sort of more mushy relationships, dynamics. It's hard to sort of slice off exactly what's happening as an overall premise. And I think there's room for both of these books to be great.
Yeah, I love the kind of setup of this. I just hate it when people do dumb things. Like Superman just breaking somebody out of prison before, I don't know, looking into it at all. I mean, he has X-ray vision. See who's in there. I don't know. Maybe try to find out who it is before you just completely set him free and madness ensues.
Do you feel like if you were in his position, like ordering a Subway sandwich from a Nazi, you'd be able to tell that he was bad before you ordered the sandwich?
Yeah, yeah. I'd be like, excuse me, sir, is that a swastika? Oh, it is? Well, you can stop making that sandwich now. My point being...
I'll go to the next Subway with it.
Is he making the swastika out of, like, mayonnaise or mustard or something? Or what's going on there?
No. I'm talking about a tattoo he has on his hand. Anyways, I think that the art is cool. It has, like, a Batman Year One look to it, which I think is a fun choice here for Superman. So...
like a Tim Sale energy.
Ooh. But yeah, this is definitely unique and cool and definitely worth checking out.
Dark X-Men number 2 for Marvel, written by Steve Fox, art by Jonah Scharf. This issue after the big loss, I guess, that these Dark X-Men suffered in the last issue. Havoc is now a zombie. We are meeting this new Goblin Queen, who is a Goblin Queen from an alternate dimension. Also, Archangel is going through a lot of changes as well. So this new X-Men team, not going very well. What'd you think about this one?
Well, I had fun with this. I'm enjoying this. I feel like we're doing a good job of kind of dealing with what's going on in these individual characters. A crazy last panel. So I really enjoyed that. Solid art. I will read more. I was a little bit like, oh, God, what's this going to be? But I was pleasantly surprised.
Wow. We finally cracked one. We only have to do the weirdest Fall of X book of all time to find a way for Pete to like it, because Havoc just like dies, reanimates. He's like, ah, it's crazy. I love
crazy,
her, but I'm dead. I'm definitely dead over here. And you know, all these strange things are happening. I like this team. We get a little LCD shows up here, which I was like, yo, keep on pulling these X-Men characters from the deep dark back to prominence.
Well, it is Dark X-Men, so yeah, you got to pull it from the deep dark.
Let's move on to another advanced one, Edenwood number 1, which is out October 18th from Image Comics by Tony S. Daniel. This is very different from Noctera, which we're going to be talking about in a little bit. This is kind of a straight across the bow fantasy book that focuses on some teen characters. What did you guys think about this one?
Yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but it's a fucked up cool story. Love the bone mask. Absolutely bananas art. Cool story, bro. I'm going to check out more.
You love the bone mask. I also like this, though. I was like, I have questions about the world. It feels like this is one of those Final Fantasy inspired worlds where it's like, oh, this is fantastical, but also there's a bunch of technology and everyone has guns at different periods, and it's sort of a wash of that, and I would love a little bit more specificity.
I agree with that. I mean, Tony S. Daniel is always phenomenal on the art. I'll read everything that he draws, but yeah, this is a lot of fantasy stuff that I'm not 100% sure what it coalesces into at this point, so we'll see. I'll read the second issue because I like his stuff, but I'm not 100% sure at this point. The Vigil number 5 from DC Comics, written by Ram V, art by Sid Kodian and Dev Prominick. This is picking off of the massive reveal from the last issue, where it turns out that all the characters in the Vigil are in the imagination of one of the other characters. That was the wild, crazy twist that happened in issue number 4. Here we find out exactly what that means and how that happened. And it, in my opinion, does not disappoint. I continue to love this. I continue to love the emotion and the wild inventiveness here. This is great. This is continues to be one of the best books that DC is publishing.
Agreed. I've been really enjoying this from the jump, even back in Lazarus Unleashed event or whatever, that's the wrong name for it, but it was great right from then, and I've really enjoyed the exploration here. It reminds me of a lot of like 90s comics where it's just like huge swings, putting it all out there in this limited run. I believe the next issue is the last issue.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how it all ties up. Ramvee, unbelievable writer. There's an unbelievable team on here. Evil Kids kind of freaked me out a little bit, but I'll be reading it to the end to see how it wraps up.
Loki number four from Marvel, written by Dan Waters, art by Jermaine Peralta. Speaking of wrapping things up, this is the last issue of this title, as Loki finally gets all of his toenail clippings together and
Yum yum.
That is actually what he's been doing. He took a bunch of toenail clippings and turned them into a boat, and he's trying to find the various pieces of the boat. This last one brings him face to face with Bullseye, which is a wild pairing that I never would have predicted. Pete, you seem surprised.
Well, yeah, low key, I think this is a really enjoyable book. I was really impressed with Bullseye in this. I thought Bullseye was such a fun, cool villain choice, and Spider-Man also was used really interestingly well in this as well. So as a kind of a pawn for Loki. I Dan Waters is writing the crap out of this. This is a really fun, cool story.
I sort of on the opposite side, I feel like Bullseye's just been always too juiced up. Like, why does he get to be like such a powerful villain? He's just good at
Because he
throwing
doesn't
darts.
miss, bro. Can you
He's the same as
imagine not
Hawkeye.
being able
He's
to
the same
miss?
as
Like, you could kill
a bunch of
somebody with a
people.
paper airplane, with a
Yeah, but
paper
in this,
clip,
he's like
with
he's
a.
doing magic and reading a book. And he's throwing a paper airplane. I don't know. I feel like just Bullseye gets this badass credit that I don't subscribe to, and like I like this book. I like top to bottom. It was definitely one of the more woolly, like Loki stories we've seen lately, which is cool, I think. A perfect character to do that. Just the choice of Bullseye here, I was like, what? Who's like dying for these two to meet?
That's kind of how I felt about the Nightcrawler. Like, who's this for? Why is Nightcrawler Spider-Man?
All right.
We
No
like
need to
that though.
slam something else to plus up something else,
Yeah,
but
it
I
sounds
will
like something
say
I would say.
I was enjoying it. I like the fact that we got to see these two characters together. I thought this was a great series. It was a lot of fun. It was weird. It was interesting. More swings like this, please. Noctera number 16 from Image Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Tony S. Daniel. This is bring to an end for now,
I don't want it to
Noctera.
end.
For
I
now.
know,
For
for
now.
now.
Okay,
So you gotta figure out what happens here. This is
Wabi?
set in a world where darkness has reigned and dark
In
monsters
a
have taken,
world.
in a world where dark monsters have taken over everything. One lady who is also a dark monster is going to fight against them. But she's not really the main character. It's actually her brother that they're more focused on.
Yeah, I
Good
thought this was
voice.
a really great ending.
Thank you.
All right, that's enough of that. Yeah, I mean,
Never.
oh boy. It was a cool ending that you kind of, when you have dark monsters and then there's light beings, we're going to get a big kind of Care Bear stare at the end to win the day. And they did that. And I feel like it was a great kind of culmination of all these ideas executed in a cool way. The art is super tight bananas. And yeah, I mean, this is a great team. You got a great writer, an unbelievable artist, and it was an interesting, cool idea that was well executed.
It really was a Care Bear stare. So shouts to that. Shouts to you, Pete, for nailing that. It's funny, like you say, Alex, the main character isn't the superhero here. Almost to a, there's such great distance between the story even and Noctera. And it reminded me of like reading the first few issues being like, oh, this is cool, like sort of a dark world, a cool superhero. But it really was just like sort of a ensemble story focused on this one kid, or a villain story.
Yeah, the
Blacktop
Blacktop
Bill
Bill was
being,
such an amazing character.
So that's what Scott Snyder is such a great writer, because he sort of lets the story find its power where it does, and it just changed a lot from issue one to issue 16, and ended in a place that I did enjoy. And this story is also about like just driving trucks.
Dude, sometimes you just gotta hit the open road. You know what I mean?
100%.
Hammer down.
Titans number 3 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Nicola Scott. In this issue, the Titans are coming directly for the new, well, it's not Brother Blood, but the Cult of Blood, I guess. I'm not 100% sure of the name, but they are trying to raise Trigon. The new leader of the Cult of Blood is fighting against that. There's a lot of twists and turns here, leading to, I would say conservatively, the most upsetting last panel of the week.
Shouts to that. Agree. I was like, yucky. Went in way closer than I imagined it was going to at the end.
You guys, but I loved it. I thought it was a great twist, just in terms of
me too.
Doing a good job of making you think, oh, this isn't going to happen. And then it happens. So good job.
Wait, are you guys talking about the gross fur monster that lives in people's mouths? Is that what you're talking about?
Do you ask? Yes. Are you wondering if we're talking about that? Yes, of that course was the, that's what we're really talking about.
No, I was talking about the fact that, like, the Flash, he runs fast, which is disgusting to me.
That's gross.
I agree.
Slow down, guy. What are you going through?
Take your time, man.
That's so funny. I never really put that together of why I hate the Flash so much, but it really crystallized in that moment for me.
And when you realize he's just fast?
No, that I don't like running, you know, and I think that I something I didn't really realize of why maybe I don't like the Flash.
Wow, that was an unexpected effect of that joke that I made. Yep. What did you guys think about this issue, though, this comic book?
This comic book? I've been enjoying this series. I like the creepiness. I like that it's approaching it from a very Titans place where they're all like friends helping each other out. And then we're getting this surprising, gross thing underneath. And a lot of there's a central mystery here as well that we're going through. But this stuff is also good. And we're still getting a big splash page where they're like, Titans, go, let's go. So working on multiple fronts. So Tom Taylor's good at great art.
Squares.
Guardians of the Galaxy number 6 from Marvel, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Alex Lids. In this issue, we're finally finding out what caused Grootfall as the Guardians of the Galaxy, spoiler, die. Basically, they're all dead. They're all inside of Groot's head. And in their final moments, they're going through what they did wrong that led to this point. We find out exactly what caused Grootfall. And yeah, that's it. Rip the Guardians of the Galaxy. Good last issue.
End of series.
I mean, I love the way this was kind of set up and played out. Like the whole it was my fault pick kind of thing that kept repeating was a really cool storytelling device that they used. But man, Grootfall was such a cool visual thing that happened. And like Guardians of the Galaxy, it's a creative kind of take on things. It's a weird spin and you don't know what you're going to get. And that's why I appreciated about it. Like, I don't know if you could pull this off in any other kind of story, but man, it hits you in the feels. It's kind of epic. And man, the art is just, every time you saw like a group fall, it just felt so huge and epic.
I really like Kelly and Lansing's work, but this was the first issue that actually felt like it had a real handle on the characters. Like it was really being like, these Guardians, this is what they do, is they are very emotional. They care for each other so much, but it's all internal and it takes an extreme situation for them to bring it out. And we got it here. I just feel like it started in a strange place and we weren't getting enough of the story, both emotionally and actual narrative, because of the sort of coy choice to make Grootfall a reveal later on. So it is coming into place here. It's a shame the characters died and we'll never see them.
Yeah. I'm going to miss the Guardians, man.
Yeah, that's too bad. They're never coming back. Marvel traditionally is not bringing back characters. They kill them and they're like, nope, we're sticking with that. We're not bringing them back the next month or anything like that.
That's how comics works.
Exactly. This was the issue that I was waiting for personally. And it nailed it, but it's frustrating that it took 6 months to get there. Monarch number 6 from Image Comics, written by Rodney Barnes, art by Alex Lins. In this issue, our alien overlord
back to back Lins
is fighting against the aliens that he has led to take over and destroy the Earth. This series is great. I love the emotion here. I love the turns here. I'm very into this.
You know
Me
what
too,
I'm
but
into is anytime Alex is talking, just the sound of crickets. You know what I mean? Like, I think this is a fun audio gag. You know, sucking on a cheesesteak is fun, but this is almost more fun for me.
It's not a gag. I think the cricket's actually inside my house, and I keep walking over in the corner, and then it gets quiet because I'm intimidating to this bug. But then it starts putting out the vibes because it wants to hook up. I'll go scare it again.
Yeah. Which you gotta, Justin, you gotta hang a sock on your doorknob. So
yeah, let the cricket know who's in this
busy.
Room. You know what I mean?
Exactly. You got stuff.
Oh, that explains that the tiny cricket sock I saw in the doorway to my basement.
You ignored the sock. That's the problem.
Oh, man, boy. I messed up.
Hey, do you guys have any opinion about this book, Monarch Number 6? Or just.
Oh.
All right, let's
you
move
don't
on.
Be,
talk about...
I thought you were going to say something there, buddy. No,
I was waiting for
I was
the
surprised...
cricket noise.
I see. I was surprised that this was the end. Like, this wraps up the story, and it wrapped it up in a way that I like. I thought it was emotionally satisfying, but I thought there was going to be a little bit more, like, heft. I thought there was going to be one big extra thing. But I agree, this was just a great sort of character study on a grand scale leading up to this issue, and I thought this issue was going to pay it off in a little bit of a bigger way.
Yeah, I think it's
this
a
was
very...
the last issue?
Yeah, they wrapped up
it
this...
It said the end.
Yeah. Huh. See the end there?
Yeah, what do you
See
know?
The end?
See okay. the end where it says the end? I felt like this was
And it's
a
also
cool...
the book, the last page is them posing in a family portrait where they're basically like, bye.
Oh. Thanks for reading.
I guess I missed that somehow.
Oh, well, interesting. Maybe you're reading
That's
too
crazy.
Many comics. Maybe there's too many comics. I just
Doesn't
think this
seem
is
possible.
A lovely story about love and, you know, what people are willing to do for it. So I thought it was very touching and nice.
Let's move to another advanced one. Dark Spaces Dungeon Number 1 out October 11th from IDW, written by Scott Snyder, art by Hayden Sherman. This is the team that kicked off the whole Dark Spaces line, coming back for a news story about a terrifying murder case, I guess you would call it. I don't know. Whatever it is.
Terrifying people, dungeons is what it fucking
terrifying
is.
Terrifying dungeons. You could figure that out for the title. But as you'd expect, this is Scott Snyder very much leading into horror. Hayden Sherman also leading into horror. Another great series from this team.
Yeah, this book feels like Scott Snyder, I don't know if you all out there follow him on social media, but he, over the course of the last like decade, he's like moved to the woods. He works in like a tiny house that I think he built behind his house. I feel like some of the parenting stuff, especially at the beginning of the book, feels like it's ripped from his life. This feels like it's him sitting in his tiny like writer shack, imagining horrible things happening in the woods that surround him. So that feels like the starting point for this. And then it's just like, just straight up horrifying shit that we get to see and then revealed at the end to be coming in a very direct way.
Yeah, this is, I don't want to spoil anything, but this is just a scary as shit story of just kind of a worst possible scenario where you're finding out you're living in a place that people are getting horribly tortured. So fun? But yeah, Scott Snyder weaves a very interesting web, and I'll be excited to check out more.
Uncanny Avengers Number 2 for Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Javier.
The Dukes?
The Dukes. This is the Fall of X storyline. We're getting Captain America teaming up with the new Unity Squad to try to take it to Captain Krakoa, a mysterious character who is now a nuclear power in the Marvel Universe by the end of the issue. What'd you all think about this?
The cricket's not the only one hooking up, because we're getting some major Captain Krakoa action shower.
Yeah, right
we
in front of somebody's
tongue, like
brother. And like, you know, he's like, yo, that's my sister. And old Captain Carnation doesn't give a fuck.
The Strucker kids.
Yeah, this is tough because it's a lot of mom and dad fighting, which I don't like. But Deadpool talking shit about the X-Men was fun. Black Widow, shooting Captain Carnation was fun. Anytime somebody's revealing stuff, but then you don't get to see it, but then people are hooking up in the shower. Is that fun? I don't know, but this is weird.
Wow. That's a big shower, I gotta say though. So like, you know, when you have a shower that big, you're gonna
Have
need
you
to
ever,
clean
have you guys ever done that? Have you ever hooked up with somebody's sister while their brother is like sleeping right outside the
pretending
shower?
to sleep right next to the shower. That's a
Yeah.
very specific
Pete, you've done
scenario.
that, right?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, we've all been on both sides of that, I feel like.
I guess technically I have since I do have a brother, but yeah, it's nothing like it was portrayed in this.
Wait, what?
I have
You're putting
more
yourself in the brother
questions.
position? Yeah, I have so many questions. I have so many questions. Great. I won't ask them because I know Pete would be very mad if I said what was in my brain just now. But this book feels like they're really leaning into the Avengers side of the Uncanny Avengers here on the in the Fall of X books. This feels very much like an Avengers book. There's a little bit of fun here. It's drawn in a sort of lighter way. So I like that different tone.
I mean, do
Some.
you? Oh, sorry.
No, go
Go
ahead,
ahead.
Pete.
You haven't done your review yet. I'm just at this point. I'm like, who the fuck is it? Stop with this.
Oh,
Because
with
at this
Captain
point,
Krakoa?
yeah, at this point, the buildup is too much, and now I'm just
It's
like, I
been two
don't.
issues.
It's too much.
It's
Tell
too
me who the
much.
fuck it is.
The theory that Justin and I have been talking about that's 100% wrong is Strife.
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 Here's the
She
thing.
knows who it is because she was like, "Oh, it's you." And he was like, "Shut up."
Well, don't you think she would? They're in the shower, kissing.
Yeah. She's like, "Ah,
How
shut up,
often how often
Strife.
are
You're
you
not wearing your sharp armor."
How often are you kissing someone you're like, "Oh, it is you." Nice.
All the time. Most of the time when I'm making out with somebody and their brother is right outside, they're like, "Oh, it's you."
Oh, it's you, your brother's sister.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
Oh.
Very
The thing is, if we're just going to reveal this to be the evil Hydra Cap, that's no good anymore. They've let the
Yeah.
mystery hang on too long. I think it has to be somebody besides Hydra
What
Cap.
is with you guys in this? Is this mystery has been going on too long for two issues so far, plus a free comic book
Because
review?
it hasn't been going on for two issues. There was an issue before
Thank
where
you, JT.
Captain
Get him.
Krakoa went and killed
Get him.
Congress, if you remember.
Yeah.
And then would that get
Get him.
I forgot
It's
about
been
that
going on
because
for a
the
long time. This
long
bullshit.
time?
Yeah, Captain
Three issues.
Parsley
Calm
had or
down.
fucking Berm Bush, whatever
Do you
the
remember
fuck.
back
Why
in
you
the
have
day where Chris
twigs hanging
Claremont
out of
was
your
like Havoc, Lorda, whatever her name is, Polaris? Like they found a whale. They're like, whoa, weird whale. And then 30 issues later, he was like, by the way, that was the Brood. Here we go. That's
See,
what
that
I
was just
based
right.
all
Just
storylines
right.
on. Yeah.
Cool. Cool, definitely.
Cool. Yeah, that
30
was a fun
issues
story.
minimum to reveal a mystery.
Something is killing your anticipation, but also something is killing the children. Number
Come on, let's
33
go.
from Boom Studios, written by James Tynion IV, art by Wirtha Del Daria. In this issue, Erica is gearing up with her big fight for on a
Oh,
number of
shit.
fronts. Pete, I was very surprised to hear. It sounds like this was your issue of the week. Why did you like this so much?
Oh man, well, this does a great job of just building up the tension for what's to come. Plus, taking some shots at therapy in this, you know, the kid's like, "Yo, this therapy is fucking hard and weird and dumb," and she was like, "Okay, all right, yeah, those are good points." But I love the art, I love the storytelling, I love all the things that are happening and the all this coming together in this kind of issue, just getting you so excited for the next one. Yeah, I am so impressed with this book all the time. I mean, it really is taking a long time to tell the story and taking a lot of turns and kind of all sorts of stuff. But man, I am very excited to see what's going to go down.
Justin, what about you?
The this book is has become such a hangout book where the characters are hanging out, not a ton happens, we're hanging out. It's all this book, this issue is all anticipation for the next issue.
Yeah, it
It's
is.
such a and like it's fine. Like I don't want I'm not like the hater of this book,
It seems
but of
like
all
you are.
of James Tynion's titles, this one I'm always like, God, what's there's just nothing going on here ever. There's always like,
That's not true. There's a lot of things going on. It's all
I'm
setting
ready.
things up.
Yeah, I know. I've watched those videos where it's just a bunch of dominoes being set up, and I'll tell you what, I fast forward to the end.
Oh my.
It is very interesting to me that I think Pete and I like this book in general much more than you do. And the way that I've come to peace with it is every issue is 20 pages of the story. Like, this is very much like Brian Michael Bendis on Ultimate Spider-Man decompressed book, where it's like you're not getting an issue, you're getting 20 pages of Something Is Killing the Children. And I love it. Like, I love the emotion that's present there. I love Werther Del Darius' art. It's phenomenal throughout. The character designs are out. But I get what you're saying, because a lot of the times it doesn't work on an issue by issue to basis. But if you're looking at it as like, I'm getting a little snippet of this world, it does work.
It does work if you love the world that they set up, if you love
And if
the
you hate things
characters.
that are good, you won't like it.
All right. Well, I don't know about all that, but I just think that, yeah, I
Pete,
understand what
I'm
you're
on your
saying.
side. I'm attacking
Well,
justice.
he's on your side. He's
I thought
so,
attacking
but then I
me.
wasn't sure. I don't know about that. Anyways, I just think that, like, I agree with what the Zelbatron is saying, is that, like, if you like this world, then you want to spend time in it. You, even if it's not like all the answers, it's giving you a little bit at a time. Like these creepy little doll things that are like where the monsters are stuck in are just so fascinating to me. The anytime you see them, the tension of it is just like so intense. You're like, oh God, is this
Yeah,
monster gonna
there's a
fuck me?
doll.
You know what I mean?
That happens when you see regular dolls. I'm just saying, like, something is killing the children. I want to read That's What's Killing the Children.
Oh boy.
Nice. Terror War, excuse me.
Just before we move on,
Terror
Terroir, a great wine book.
War.
I do like Something Is Killing the Children. It's well written. House of Slaughter moves at a pace that I think speaks to
Yes.
me a little bit more.
Oh, House
And
of Slaughter is
this
one
book
of,
is still good.
whatever.
You're right. House of Slaughter is more issue by issue basis. Something by is Killing the Children is more a wash of the world. But I think they're both
Still
good, and
too
you're a
great.
stupid fucking piece of shit. All right, why don't we move on to Terror War number
How
six?
happy that made me.
Terror War. Say it
Terror
like
War, you
Terror
asshole.
ter Water, right? Like sugar water.
Yeah. Sugared water.
Terror
Terror War.
War.
Terror War.
Terror War.
Number six from Image Comics, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Dave Acosta. In this issue, we're getting a lot more about the Terror War and exactly what's happening as they fight back on it. There's some big revelations of this issue. What'd you guys think about this one?
This is continues to be a lot of fun. We kind of get the, we thought Mohammed died, but then he's okay. But then you have a goop monster that kind of forms the face of him, and you're like, oh shit. But yeah, I like what's going down. I think this is interesting, and it continues to move things forward in an enjoyable way. Shut up, cricket. I feel like I'm telling making a
Something
good
is
point
killing the
here.
cricket.
Yeah,
Something's killing the cricket.
I wish.
I'm gonna keep reading it.
I don't know, this book feels a little too cool for school when I'm reading it. It feels a little bit like all the characters like, yeah, it's crazy, blah 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 blah. And it's not, it's there's just some
Blah,
an
blah, blah,
element
blah,
that it's just an element that's not quite locked in for me in this book.
Well, why don't we move on and talk about Wolverine number 37 from Marvel, written once again, excuse me, by Benjamin Percy, art by Juan Jose Rip. This is bringing Wolverine after the Weapons of Vengeance storyline fully into the Fall of X storyline, kind of. But it's more picking up on the previous storyline where he's tracking down a bunch of clones of himself around the world. In this issue, it is with Hulk. And he visits a bunch of places that he's been before. We get a Wendigo Logan. We get to see a Madripoor Logan. Bunch of continuity stuff going on here. What'd you all think about this?
This book is really fun. I've liked this for a long time. We've talked about this, that we're surprised. Alex and I are surprised that Pete doesn't like it more. I was like, okay, big reset. We start with I'm alone again. I'm hated again. And on screen, no more mutants, Orcus promises. Like, fun. Wolverine's alone, gonna take on Orcus from the side. And then we get right back into just Wolverine getting wrecked. The Hulk shows up, he gets wrecked. Everyone's just getting slashed to pieces. I was like, oh, this is more of what we love and a reset. But I think the secret underlying thing here is we're going through a lot of old Wolverine continuity. Like you mentioned, Alex, I think there was a great Wolverine Wendigo arc way back in the day.
Yeah, there was.
Preview for the next issue is Wolverine and Cap, just like the iconic Uncanny X-Men cover from Chris Claremont era with Black Widow.
Yeah, I think that this is starting to get enjoyable again. I mean, I'm over the Wolverine Minions part, but we get a little bit of that in here, unfortunately. But what I really loved about this, it's a jump through kind of Wolverine's timeline. We get Patch, we get, back when he fought Hulk for his first appearance and Wendigo in his first appearance. So this was a real kind of cool walk through his timeline and really kind of some amazing battles, some fantastic fights. I really loved it. And I really liked the Banner stuff as well. I thought that was very cool and interesting and very enjoyable. I'm looking forward to when we can get past the Wolverine Minions bullshit. So starting to really get back on
you
board.
You mean clones, but you mean minions. You say minions, you mean the clones from the previous
line. Yeah, I call them minions because it was such a dumb idea. Anyways.
He's the best there is at what he does, and what he does is love da-na-na.
Yeah, exactly. Fun Minions reference. So I'm starting to really kind of enjoy Wolverine again, which feels good. I'm looking forward to getting more into it as well. Amazing.
Yeah, I just love that Benjamin Percy writes towards Juan Jose Rip and was like, what's the grossest thing that could happen to Wolverine right now? Let's have Juan Jose Rip draw that, because
100%
he can. His art is disgusting, and I will read any issue that he draws at any time. Savage Squad 6, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Robert Venditti, art by Brockton McKinney. In this issue, our main characters are still fighting some enormous wolves in the remains of
Big Chernobyl, bad wolves.
I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're huge wolves with lightning eyes. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Really cool looking wolves.
Yeah, okay, just not some just good regular action wolves in this book.
Yeah, there's a ton of insane violence and fights. It's really glorious, and there's a lot of blood everywhere.
A lot of blood. One of the characters sacrifices themselves so unnecessarily at the beginning.
Oh, come
of the
on,
fight.
Dude, that's not Rosie. Unnecessary. You're giving them some time, giving them some space to get clear.
I was like, wait, this fight just started. Why are you throwing your body into the Electro Wolf? Strange. This story, I don't know this world too much either, but the things that happen are wild.
Yeah, I'm having a great time with this. This is really, very savage and a great squad, so I'm having a good time with it.
Yeah,
I can't wait.
Would you say
to...
you like the savage and you like the squad? Would you say your estimation is like a 6 out of 6?
Well, that's the thing. We're at number 3 right now, and I can't wait till we get to 6. You know what I mean?
Well, in Hell We Fight, number 4 from Image Comics, written by John Layman, art by John.
In Hell We Fight!
In this issue, we're continuing to follow our misfits who are in hell and fighting. They are trying to get an angel back to heaven, ostensibly so that they can potentially get into heaven themselves. This continues to be a very fun title. I'm having a good time with it.
Yeah, and that was kind of my plan for getting into heaven, like find an angel and be like, I'm with that guy, you know what I mean? And just kind of walk
from hell.
Yeah, exactly. See if you can get in that way. Smart move. I think this is just a crazy fun adventure. I love the characters in this. You know, there's that one little devil who kind of gets beat up and shunned, but then saves the day. So totally redeems himself. Love the giant dragon. So cool looking. The art's absolutely fantastic in this. This continues to be a really fun, creative, cool story.
I look forward to Pete in hell having to just like work for a very aggressive landlord for all of eternity, fixing so many sinks for Bruce Wayne. This book is fun. It's there's these characters I like, and I like the sort of ramshackle journey that they're on.
Ooh.
Why don't we
Graves
move on and
Ramshackle.
talk about our next issue? This is one I'm just going to mention the title and the creative team, and then I think we can kind of move on from there and not really talk about it too much.
Wow.
Spider-Man number 34 from Marvel, written by Zeb Swells, art by Patrick Gleason. And then we'll move on and talk about the Lonesome Hunters, the Wolf
great.
Cub.
Yeah, that's a great
now,
story. Can't wait to talk about
this
that.
Book is in the stack, The Amazing Spider-Man, so
oh,
it is
it?
Worth talking about. It
oh,
wasn't an accident.
Okay.
I mean, and, you know, we've talked about this run, the Zeb Wells run, for quite some time. And currently in this book, Peter Parker is injected with the Goblin Serum. He's doing straight up villainy shit.
Here's the thing. He's not injected with the Goblin Serum. He's injected with the sins of Norman Osborn.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I think there legitimately, like all jokes aside, I think there is a textual difference that they are ignoring in this arc. But go ahead, Justin.
Well, that's fair, because that's also where I'm like, this issue, I was like, this is a little much for even me.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We get, it's just very dark from the Peter Parker side of it to the Kraven side, where he's like contemplating ending his life for the entire issue, essentially, mm-hmm. which I was like, there's an interesting twist
as
at the end.
As the ring leader, you can relate, you know what I mean?
As what?
What?
As the reader, you're like, yeah, we should be ending our lives because
oh, I see.
It's killing
nope,
me.
Nope, take it back. Don't don't do that.
Don't say that. But I do think I don't know why we're doing this. What's mm-hmm. the overall idea here? What's the comment on Spider-Man? What's the comment on Peter Parker? Because really this feels like almost like a dark timeline, or like a broken earth, or some that kind of a situation we're dealing with, and not a story that feels like it's, this is Peter Parker working it out.
Well, that's the thing, is this nightmare continues, but to me, I was like, oh, now I see the point of this. This is a redemption arc for Norman Osborn, because if he saves Spidey, you know, I think that's puts him in a better place of, like, you know, instead of Norman Osborn, who we don't trust, to actually being able to trust him with stuff. So that's what I think is happening here. And it's painful to have it go through it, but I don't know. Maybe something on the other side of that will be interesting.
Well, to your point, Pete, this is, I mentioned this with the last issue, that I was frustrated with the whole Kraven's Last Hunt text of it all. And the issue starts off with Norman running in on Mary and Paul and being like, you got to get out of here. Peter is, something is wrong with him. He is going to come for you next. You got to go. And he doesn't exactly explain why, but it's clearly like Peter is doing the goblin thing of, I'm going to throw Paul off of a bridge and break his neck. And Mary Jane is going to,
he says such.
Yeah, he says as such. And that part, I got to be honest, like, I was into the panic and the emotion of that. That worked for me. But then beyond that, when they started to get into the whole Kraven being buried thing, using the same rhythm of the text that Kraven Les Hunt had, then they started doing it with Norman Osborn as well, it completely lost me. Like, I, my problem is the problem that you're saying, Justin, which is, what are we saying about Peter Parker here? And the answer to me is nothing so far. Like, ooh, if he had the sins of Norman Osborn, he'd be unfettered and he wouldn't have any of the responsibility. So he just, like, go and murder all of these people. Sure, but I'm not learning anything new about him here necessarily.
And why do we want to see Peter Parker murder?
Versus him? That first scene through Norman Osborn's perspective was much more interesting to me, because to what Pete was saying, it's more illuminating about Norman, it's more illuminating yeah. about Barry, and it's even more illuminating about a Paul, a character who thus far is a big nothing.
Yeah, and Norman is the main character of this. Like, Peter Parker's just the monster under the bed for this entire issue. Yeah. So, like, and maybe that's a temporary thing, and I do like some of the things that Zeb Wells has been doing, unpopular opinion on this podcast, perhaps.
Well,
but,
no, I mean, Zeb Wells is an amazing writer. I love Zeb Wells. You know, I just think that sometimes, you know, you got to do a story that maybe isn't your favorite or something.
What
I don't
is
know
this
like
thing? This 100% is not true. You know this, right? Like, this is Zeb Wells' choice to do this thing. Nobody is like has a gun to his head and is forcing him to.
Yeah. Who do you think's the secret? Wait, Zeb Wells, more like Web Cells.
Whoa! No, we've interviewed Zeb and he's amazing and a fantastic person and an unbelievable writer. But I think in this business, sometimes there are times where you take something, you're like, you take a gig on something to get another gig or to prove yourself here to get
Well,
something you want to
I
do.
Here's what I'm going to
I think
say right
he's
here.
writing a
Like, I
story.
think this is the way to solve this. Let's get a trending hashtag free Zeb Wells. Right, guys? Hashtag free
Definitely.
Zeb Wells. Let's put it on Blue Sky or wherever people talk about things these days.
Yes, Blue Sky's the perfect platform for free Zeb Wells.
Great. They don't use hashtags. The Lonesome Hunters, The Wolf Child, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics by Tyler Crook. In this issue, we are continuing to follow the titular Wolf Child, as well as our dude, old dude with a gigantic sword and a small girl who has befriended the Wolf Child. Pete, I know you love this one, so why don't you talk about it?
Yeah, this is just a really
I
unbelievable.
picked this,
Yeah, this
Alex.
was
God.
Justin's
Oh,
pick.
I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah, it's I'll
You
let
guys
Justin
both
go
look
ahead.
the same to me.
Yeah, but Pete did hoot and holler when I picked this, so I'll give it to you.
Ooh, ooh.
Go
All
ahead.
right. Well, yeah, I mean, the art is crazy type bananas, just unbelievable. I love all the things happening in this issue. I also like how kind of things are coming together. I just think it's such a cool last panel. Why not give a giant sword to a wolf and see what happens? So yeah, I'm very excited about what's happening here and the story and the art. This is continues to be such a creative, cool book. I'm very excited about it.
Just great characters. Like, we've got an
Yeah.
126-year-old reluctant occult daddy, granddaddy,
Right, right,
hanging out
right.
with a youthful sidekick just discovering this world. We got talking birds. We got a wolf boy. We've got a big old wolf, a bunch of bad dudes. The art's really cool. It's Mike Mignola adjacent. Makes sense. It's Tyler
Ooh,
Crook.
okay.
If you're a fan of Hellboy, I think you can jump in on this. It's really nice.
Fish Flies, number 2 from Image Comics by Jeff Lemire. This is about a town who has been taken over by fish flies, and the criminal dude who has been turned into a giant fly is having like an Iron Giant style relationship with a girl who cannot stop sneezing.
Snack Girl. Yeah, I think this is like a very interesting Jeff Lemire book. Sometimes you get this mix of animal people, and Jeff Lemire is kind of doing a little bug action here. So it's a very creative and cool, kind of tripped out and weird. And at one point, this lady says to the cop, "Follow the bugs." Yeah, we get the story of kind of a bug who can't talk to this little snot girl, but they go on a lovely jumping tour of the town, and it's kind of a beautiful moment.
It's Iron Giant meets Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis, just the crossover we all demanded. I gotta say, we read Fish Flies number 1. I was like, this is interesting. And then I was up visiting my mom for Labor Day weekend in way upstate New York, and this happened. We came down to go swimming one day, and the lake was covered in these exact
Ugh, no
bugs.
way. Are you serious?
Swear. Swear. And it wasn't as crazy as it is in the book, but we got down there and it was like, oh, these bugs are going to, it's gross enough that it's hard to swim in the water because there are bugs everywhere. So
There were
it
so
really
many
hit home.
bugs. Like, I it was reading this comic, I was like, well, this doesn't happen, but you're telling me it happens.
It does happen. I imagine like the lake that my mom lives on is a small lake. On a larger lake, especially in Canada, I imagine it is more of a pestilence, like it is portrayed in the
Oh,
book.
interesting. Wow.
But it was I've walked down, I was like, I've stepped inside a Jeff Lemire book.
So
Uh-oh.
this is real. This is real life. We just
This is
don't
not,
know
yeah,
it.
it's not a fake.
And
Wow.
weirdly, I actually started hanging out with a antler boy, so I also feel like I've walked into a Jeff Lemire book.
Wow.
That's congratulations. That's been a dream.
Thank you. Thank you for the congratulations. Earth Divers, number 10 from IDW, written by Stephen Graham Jones, art by Emily Schnall. After spending the past couple of issues in the Ice Age, we're finally getting back to the whole time travel of it all. What do you all think about this one?
Well, what's nice
Sort of a
is,
reset.
oh,
Ooh.
Yeah, go ahead.
Fight, fight,
this issue,
fight.
This actually has sort of a reset to it, really bringing it back to basics, maybe setting up resetting up the timeline a little bit. This book, I like the story here, the idea of going back and putting a stop to the bad practices of America. That's cool. It just like, it doesn't quite give me enough spine to hang my hat on in this. I hang my hat on the spine, just so you know, not a coat rack. Mm-hmm. Cool. This,
you're like, I just you're like a predator that way,
yeah,
right?
I'm a predator in that way. Yeah, exactly. I'm always tailgating and popping up in different time periods. This just feels like it needs just one more step of clarity.
Do you think they tailgate? Or they're like, in every Predator movies, the Predator is doing the hunt, and then there's a bunch of other Predators who are hanging out by, like...
Yeah, they're, like, getting ready for the hunt. They're getting drunk and just, like, fucking grilling and chilling all day. Yeah, I think that... I hear what you're saying, but this book has a great lesson. If you walk into a bathroom and you see somebody cutting their hair, they're having a tough day. Don't fucking say shit, because otherwise you're going to get stabbed. Also, it talks about the importance of tic-tac-toe over time, and I really think that I'm glad someone's finally talking about it. You know what I mean? Like, tic-tac-toe is the universal, brings everybody together. You know what I mean? So it doesn't matter what time period you go, somebody's going to play tic-tac-toe with you. You know what I mean? So
humanity's favorite game.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to time travel and you can't speak the same language, you know, set up a little tic-tac-toe and you can have some communication and fun.
Or you could set up a Tenement number 4 from Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Andrea Sorrentino. In this issue, the denizens of the Tenement are continuing to explore further into the horrible bone orchard wasteland that they've been sent into. I gotta say, I feel like we've lost focus on the Tenement in this issue, which Well, I don't know. Like, I think, like, if you're going to be like, all these people live in a building and the building is sucked into a weird place, that's cool. That's a great horror premise. But in this issue, they could be literally anywhere and it doesn't matter. And that's a little frustrating to me.
It was also kind of weird how it, like, the last panel reveal is usually like an oh shit moment. And they were like, what's that? And they were like, it's so and so's apartment. Whoa! Come back next issue when we get to see the square footage. Like, what are we doing here?
Again, Pete only got real estate on his mind. But Alex, that's just what you wanted. More building. And that's what you're getting issue.
That's true.
You
so
asked
this
for
issue
building,
didn't work
you
for
give
me.
Building.
But Tenement number 5, I'm back on board.
Oh, I'm going to send you
back
my
on the board
of the Tenement. Yeah. I'm going to send you my favorite book lately, which is The Floor Plan to a Skyscraper in Manhattan. You guys are going to love it.
Also, there was a weird moment where a kid stabbed somebody and they were like, hey, how did you know she was evil? And they were like, he was like, oh, she smelled. And it was like, wow, that's a bold move. You know,
have you seen anybody who smells bad? They're unequivocally evil.
You ever smelled anybody that looks bad? They're also evil.
Wait, that's not just because someone's having, maybe a bad deodorant day doesn't mean they should get stabbed.
Having a stink day? Watch
out.
I'm coming for you with a knife.
I stab everybody.
Wow.
Everybody.
Wow.
Too far?
Alex,
too
far.
Yeah,
way too far. Don't come up to a table if Alex is there, because if you don't smell nice, stab you.
Yeah.
Stabby stab.
Hey guys, we got some free buttons, got some free stickers, and I'm going to stab you.
Free blade into your gut.
Yeah, work on that pitch.
I do like this book, but I agree with you, Alex. It does feel like it's just like it's part of the Bone Orchard universe. What's that? You don't really know yet, but this issue specifically is very much in the Bone Orchard universe.
Yeah, that's where we grow the bones. You got to come there this fall. We got the whole Bone Festival. Hang out. We got a bone cannon. We got a band
bone
that
popping.
Play bone music. It's pretty sweet. You can take as many bones as you can carry. In a bag.
Yeah. Bone sauce, hard bone cider, drunk blaze, horseshoes. So, like, I hear you. I think we need a little bit more back into explaining what's happening.
My problem is I always go to the bone orchard with my family and we're like, this is a great idea. And then we have all these bones. And like, what are we supposed to do with them? You know, we make
Yeah.
one pie and then we have all of these
Bone pie.
bones just hanging around and they're rotting there. The bones, I
But
mean.
it's perfect for Thanksgiving, a good bone pie to bring to your family.
Oh, that's true. I didn't really think of that. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Stranger Things, number 3 from IDW, written by Cameron Chittock, art by Farrell Pei. And in this issue, we're continuing to have the Stranger Things kids and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles team up for crossover conspiracy. Pete, you're clapping. Take it away.
Ah, this is so much fun. Oh my God, I love it. And spoiler alert, we got a Krang sighting. Fucking Krang, baby, come on.
Woven in,
Yeah,
Crane woven into
just
the
so
continuity.
smartly woven in there. I don't know. The team on this is just killing it on so many levels. I love this because it does have the old Eastman and Lair theme to the art. It has that feel, which is really great. So you get some nunchucks on fire here. You get so much great stuff in this. This is just a fantastic book, and I love the crossover. They're killing it on both sides, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles side and the Stranger Things side. The art style is so cool and unique. I'm having such a blast with this book.
This book does it, like I said, does a great job of combining the two sort of mythologies here, really blending them together, which crossovers like this I feel like never do. So that's really cool. And I also like that the TMNT guys always have that toothy grimace on their face where it's like teeth on one side, nose, teeth on the other side, just like the action figures. Makes me laugh every time I see it.
Yeah, man.
Last but not least, Scrappers, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Cliff Bleszinski and Alex DeCampi, art by Ryan Kelly and Jordy Belair. This is continuing the adventures of our hyper-advanced dogs who are fighting the man in the future. Pete, we were talking about on the live show about anthropomorphized animals. I know this is one of your favorites. What'd you think about this?
I could have sworn I saw Alex DeCampi at the Baltimore Comic Con, but probably
Mm-hmm.
wasn't. Probably
Nope.
wasn't.
Probably wasn't. I wasn't going to
Probably
call that
wasn't.
out,
but yeah, you did that.
I did do that, and I was like, ah, man, not her, but pretty cool. Anyways, Alex DeCampi does great stuff. Big fan. So yeah, I thought this was a continues to be a lot of fun. Everything's kind of going wrong, but they're making some progress. The kind of main dog's getting to know his collar and all the things it can do. I mean, jetpacks are fun. Yeah, I think this is a fun book with interesting characters. I want to keep reading it and seeing what's going on, but the art team and the writing is doing a great job.
Very fun. It reminds me of Dinomutt. You guys ever watched Dinomutt from back in the day? Blue Hanna-Barbera cartoon, like a dog,
Not
robot
the
dog.
mama.
Blue Falcon, nope. Blue Falcon and Dinomutt? No?
Nope.
Brought me back to that deep, dark memory. Or not dark, but fun. And yeah, this book is fun too.
Yeah, Pete, real quick, which deep dark memory did this bring you back to?
Deep fun memory.
Well,
Yeah, there
probably
was that.
Strays. I was worried it was going to turn into a Strays book. So far, so good.
For me, it was when my friends and I, there were me and three of my friends, we went to go see this dead body in the woods, and like whole bunch of things happened. There were some leeches at one point. We told the whole
Where
story.
were
Did you
they? Where
drop
were
a
the
comb?
leeches?
Yeah, we
Did you
dropped a
drop a
comb
comb? Oh, man.
100%.
Where were the leeches
Yeah,
at?
you want to go see a dead
All over
body?
the place. All over the place, yeah.
Where were the
It
leeches
turned into a
at?
Barf-O-Rama.
Anyway, that's it for the stack. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you'd like to support us and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and
Sure
YouTube.
do.
Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. Just ran out of gas. App of your choice if you'd like to support the
Oh,
show.
we know.
At Comic Book Live on Twitter /X Comic Book Club Live on TikTok or Instagram. Comicbookclublive.com for this
Cue the
podcast and many more.
grasshopper.
Until next time.
Grasshopper. Oh, you can't call a cricket grasshopper, dude. Now he's pissed. He's going to eat me.
Sorry, dude.
We'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Hey!
This episode took up a lot of real estate, right, Pete?
Oh, man. Come on.
PepsiCo Pete.